I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to King of the Road. I'm delighted to be joined by the one and only Lawrence McKenna. Lawrence. Yes.
Good to have you.
Thank you so much for coming on. I've been really looking forward to this episode.
Do you, every time that you say it on the podcast, I always go, King of the Road. Do you want to do that?
If I was better at editing and I knew how to kind of rip music and stuff, I would do that. That would be the theme tune. But sadly, I didn't know how to do it, so I've just had to use some scar thing that Adam Boltwood found for me ages ago.
Yeah, Adam Boltwood is a real... Yeah, he's a real sort of... He's a little squirrel for his... Yeah, his weird music, isn't he? He found weird music for the front three. He found weird music for TFR. He found it for Football Daily.
Yeah, he's excellent doing that. He knows how to find it. He knows how to find it rate-free, which I'm a big fan of. But because he was on, I couldn't find any other music.
You're on Acast, though, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, you get it free through Acast.
Stop it.
Yeah, afterwards we can talk about this.
This isn't ideal for everyone else. Lawrence.
Hey, guys.
This is going to sound really
weird,
but also very true. You are pretty much the inspiration for me starting this podcast.
Really? Well, after the chat that we
genuinely
had that time?
Yeah. After that chat, after the listening to yours, I've just thought, you know what, I'm going to give it a go. And I think that the podcast that you do is definitely my favourite podcast.
That's lovely.
The front three is my honourable mention.
Yeah,
it's the one that I love. The front three is a podcast that I love, but the one that I really look forward to,
True Geordie,
is the one you do with True Geordie.
Right. Yeah.
How's that? Do you love it?
Yeah, it's such an easy gig, isn't it? Like, we just turn up and chat for a few hours, and we talk less throughout the week now because we go, don't do the podcast before the podcast. It's so funny.
Is that what you have to do? Keep your powder dry.
A little bit, yeah. That's such a great phrase for it. I've never referred to it like that, but that's true. And then the funny thing was, obviously, we had Robbie Williams. And the whole story of Robbie Williams getting on the podcast was he emailed Brian, True Geordie, and said, this is Robbie Williams, can I come on the show? And we were like, is it really you? So Brian was like, follow me.
Send a selfie.
Yeah. Well, Brian said, follow me on Twitter, so... follows him, and then he sends Brian a little message, which is like, I'm just on tour at the moment, but I just want you guys to know I've been listening to every podcast, love them all. And so I get to his house, and I was a bit like, this could still be a stitch up, but
a really elaborate ploy,
super elaborate, because it is his house from the outside. Like, we're walking up to the door and, like, you know, pressing the buzzer, and he buzzes us in. We get to the door and there's real people who know our names. We go in and we're sort of waiting around for a little while, and it is a very elaborate house. It's a beautiful house, by the way. It's a really lovely house. And you can see that kind of in the background of the podcast. And then he walks down and he just, like, I go to shake his hand. He's like, no, it's got to be a hug, hasn't it?
Really?
He's like, I feel like I know you.
You are living the dream of every girl who's about 40 now.
Who's now, as he says, he calls them postmenopausal women now. Like, he says they're so much more old than we expect them to be. But it was lovely. And we had, like, lunch with him, and he was such a lovely sort of down-to-earth guy. It was crazy.
What a wonderful position to be in, like, to get people actually wanting to, they're putting themselves forward to be the guest.
Yeah.
The job's done.
Yeah, like, at that point when you know that there are people, I mean, we know there won't always be this fresh set of people, so we've got sort of some good guests on rotation, but, you know, when someone offers themselves like that, you think, wow, that's really good.
Yeah.
I'm under no impression that it's because we're doing anything exceptional. I think he would have found any podcast, but I think it just so happened to be that time, that place. And then when we were sitting there, he's like, I listened to everyone. We're like, great.
It is a very good one, though. Even if it wasn't you sitting here, it is a very good one. I remember ages ago you did one. I mean, this is probably one of the first. And I only listened to it. You know, I kind of tuned in just to, out of curiosity. And it was an episode where Brian was talking very candidly about his previous career as being a deep sea diver.
So that was actually episode 8, I think it was. It was being a deep sea diver, or the second life of a deep sea diver, or something like that.
And I just remember, I kind of, like I said, I tuned in, didn't really know what to expect, wasn't planning on sticking around, just out of curiosity, stayed for the whole thing. It was an interesting...
It's an interesting profession, though, isn't it?
Like, it's fascinating.
It's something that I think on a daily basis, you never really come into contact with people who are deep sea divers, unless you're part of that community.
Yeah, it's also very fascinating for him. Like, knowing him, I have a very superficial friendship with him. I'm not saying that it's anything other than that. But knowing him as I do, knowing his character of the True Geordie very well, to imagine him doing all that stuff, it's really interesting.
He was also much skinnier at one time as well.
Seems one of the pictures,
Like, imagine trying to squeeze into that suit now. He's like 23 stone or something. But it was quite insightful, I think, because you sort of see the graft which has gone into his life to get to that point. Yes. Instead of... It wasn't always that he thought, I was just going to do this from sort of, 18, graduate, become a YouTuber. He'd actually sort of had some life before that that he could project, which works.
And it makes him a far more interesting listen now as well, 100%. Rather than just being a YouTuber.
Yeah, and I think a lot of other YouTubers respect that because they sort of see someone who's got some life experience and they sort of see, even like KSI and the Joe Wellers sort of look up to him a little bit as a figure, I think, or sort of see something they quite like about it, the honesty and the raw side of it. And then obviously you've got someone who isn't part of that, which is me, so I absolutely just question everything that he says.
Yes.
And then that kind of works.
It's a lovely balance, though, the two of you have. It's very much a yin yang. I thought that one came out, your balance and the way that you operate and the way that he operates. I thought that it came to, I think the zenith of your relationship for me came in the episode with Dapper Laughs.
Yeah, that was an interesting episode, wasn't it? Because he's a nice guy underneath everything.
I wanted to ask you, like, if be as frank here as you can. Mm-hmm. It seemed tense. It seemed like perhaps afterwards there would have been some sort of hostility. Was it okay?
You know, it's a really weird one because when I first came in, he like looked at me, was like, I know who you are, and I shook his hand and was like, thanks for coming down. Like, I know it takes some sort of bravery or balls, whatever I said to him at the time, to actually even come into a room where you know that there's going to be someone who's not particularly a big fan of yours.
Mm.
And also I said to him, I know it takes a lot to sort of drag up something from the past, which is the reason he's down, is because I think it was Jack Mate, the YouTuber who's now sort of blown up more recently, even more so, told a story, and it particularly pissed Dan, who's Dapper Laughs, off, because he'd heard the story and gone, that's not true.
Right.
We still don't know which side we agree with, because, well, I don't know what side I agree with. And Brian sort of was caught in between because he found Dapper Laughs quite funny. And I was on the other side where I was like, I don't find that funny at all.
Yeah.
And I thought it sort of fed into a culture which was quite unhealthy for women. Not to speak for them, but maybe I found that it affected the men around me to have an unhealthy approach to it. So I was sort of seeing the actual...
I see, yeah.
The effect. And so I questioned him about it. And it got quite tense because I knew he'd do this, was there was this, like, you know when you say something inappropriate at a table and someone goes, oh, come on, mate, don't be like that.
Mm.
I knew he'd play that card, which is like, oh, come on, mate, we're just a couple of lads sitting around. And he had this, like, veneer up of, I'm just a reasonable, lovely guy now. And then every now and again, and I don't know how conscious Brian was of it, but Brian would lower a toe into the sexist water and be like, yeah, but women are just fucking slags, aren't they? And Dapper would be like, yeah, mate, whatever, yeah, they are. And I'd be like, I don't know which side of you is the real side.
Right. Yeah, I think
as a person, I liked him.
If anybody's ready to jump into that world with or without an invite, the red flag that comes along there is probably accurate. And I think that you're right to have raised it and had that conversation. But it did seem...
It was tense.
Yeah.
But I don't see what the problem is there. I always find this sort of weird issue with people who sort of... like, I don't understand why friends don't debate things and why people don't say what they think. Because it doesn't make any sense to... I understand etiquette and those sorts of... I understand it. But I don't understand why then... I don't know him and I don't particularly care for what he thinks of me. So why then would I hold back? Like... Not because the viewers, I mind what the viewers think, obviously, because they're viewers of our podcast. I care what they think. But it's not that I care what they think of me. It's that I want them to actually think about what we're saying. So I'm not telling them, judge me. I'm saying, judge what I'm saying. Judge what's going on here.
And it would be pointless for him to come on a podcast where people where the primary reason for the podcast is an open, frank discussion. You can't come on a podcast like that and then get the hump that somebody has tried to engage you in an open and frank discussion.
He kept trying to move on from it. And to be completely honest, afterwards, we all went out for dinner and
shared a bottle of wine
and had a really nice Italian.
Okay. I'm pleased to hear that, right.
And he was actually really nice. And I think he almost took, which some people can take the wrong way, my very, very severe sense of humour. I was like, you're just a sexist prick. He took it in good jest.
Okay.
And vice versa, where he was like, you're just a lefty wanker or whatever. I was like, of course, that's quite funny. Do you know what I mean?
Did he do that? Did he go as far as a snowflake? Did he throw that at you?
No, he couldn't, because I hadn't really snowflaked. I was quite aggressive. Snowflakes aren't aggressive. Do you know what I mean?
No, they melt.
Yeah, exactly. And I melted under the pressure. Right. He was a bit of a melt. Do you know what I mean?
That was the main problem. I bet he'd like that as a cuss term. I can imagine him using the term melt.
I've seen him also get into a few... Did I follow him? I don't think I followed him. You can tell who I like, because I follow the people I like. I didn't follow him after the podcast.
Right.
But I've since seen him on my timeline being challenged by a few people.
I see.
And that was what irked me, was he couldn't just... And a lot of men have this. I think I probably have it. We all have it. We can't just admit I've messed up here. Like, I misjudged the situation.
I don't know if that... I think a lot of people suffer from that. Me and you have had a dust-up. We've had one dust-up.
We've never fought. We've never been fist to fist.
No, that would be pathetic. Come on. Like, we couldn't do that. I concede you probably would. I don't think it would be...
I've seen your pecs. You wouldn't. I'm not sure I'd crush you in that way, yeah.
I don't think that either of us would come out of a full-blown fist fight with much honour.
No.
Regardless of who won. Nobody looks good in that.
I'd be throwing punches like that. I wouldn't be in it.
My priority, the thing is, it comes out in the way that I play football as well. My priority when I tackle someone is like, get safe, try and get the ball.
Protect the moneymaker.
Exactly, get safe, get the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, dive out the way of the ball if you're in goal, then perhaps try and retrieve it once safe.
Yeah, yeah,
Which isn't conducive to being a good player.
Move the body and the vital organs, leave the arm out. Exactly.
Get safe, make sure that nothing's going to hit me, and perhaps throw a fist.
A fist at it.
A fist at in the vague direction. So it would be
writer style.
But absolutely. But in our dust up, which happened 2 years ago now or so.
2 years.
It must be. I think that both of us came out of it and kind of held our hands up and said, I said that I was wrong because I certainly reacted. And
we're gonna get back into it.
I said that I was wrong and you said, yeah, you were wrong. I probably shouldn't have approached you. Yeah, so I think it
actually generated a mutual respect between the two of us.
Yeah, it did.
Because I think before that, maybe we found each other harder to read. And then after that, it was much more like, well, actually, we both acknowledged that we didn't read the other one particularly well, but actually I had a lot of respect for you.
Yeah.
So it worked quite well. And then we came to this point where...
Now we play for the same football team. We're doing all sorts. We're in WhatsApp groups together.
Yeah. I mean, that is a really loving WhatsApp group that we're in. We can't say what's happened in that WhatsApp group because...
Of course,
the YouTube series, but it's a good WhatsApp group.
It's a good WhatsApp group. For anybody who doesn't know what we're referring to here, we're alluding to the fact that Lawrence and I play for the same football team, which is called London City.
London City FC.
We play in a league that is on YouTube. It's called Next Level. Check it out. You can see.
It's really great. It's actually quite a compelling league when you watch.
Really
it.
Interesting.
Like I don't only watch our games. I watch the other games.
No,
as well.
I do as well.
And I'm always like, wow, that's actually quite a good game. Well, this was quite good.
I find myself taking it so seriously. Not seriously as our goalkeeper, but I do find myself taking it very seriously. Because before we're going to play a team, so say, for example, we're about to play... Say it's Tuesday afternoon and on Thursday we're playing Copper 90.
Yeah.
I go back and start watching previous videos of Copper 90 and start trying to find out who their danger man is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And sometimes it's you who turns up as the second best briefed person. Because the first brief is always Dan, who's our goalkeeper, who knows every player in the league. Like... I don't know how he has this level of... He's almost like a Sammy Lee type character. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you imagine he's...
He has like a dossier on everyone. All the opposition players.
Where they drink, how they get to the game. Yeah. Like, he literally knows everything. And he'll go, no, that's not the top scorer. There was some... He also picks people up all the time on little slight facts and stuff.
Yeah.
Someone will be like, they've scored 3 goals, they go 4.
Yes, he knows exactly. But his enthusiasm and love and dedication to London City FC, I think is brilliant. I mean, it's crazy, but it's brilliant.
It shows partly why people really enjoy playing football with their friends, because they really get into it.
Yeah.
And that's something I think YouTube football has shown a lot of people, is like there's another side to the game, which is not just loving those big star footballers. It's actually just watching someone that you know, you sort of invest
yeah.
in them kicking the ball correctly.
Yes.
Like, I'm probably the second worst player on the team, right? But when I score a goal...
That's me below, by the way.
Yeah, no, it's Baldwin. But I'm the second worst player on the team, but when I score a goal, like, there's so many people who message me and they're like, I can't believe you scored that goal. They're so happy for you.
You've got a very good conversion rate. Your minutes per goal scored would be very good.
Yeah, probably. They've probably gotten better. And I could definitely improve.
I think we all could. But it'd be good. And I thoroughly miss it now, though. Those Thursday nights up in Tottenham playing football.
Quite enjoyed that.
It was brilliant.
It's a nice little place to play as well, isn't it? Like, the actual pitch is quite a satisfying pitch.
The pitch is beautiful. I mean, you take your life into your own hands walking from the station to the pitch. But aside from that...
Walk with a mate, you'll be all right.
Exactly. It's good.
And I together could take a guide.
Yeah, so once we've... Once we've got ourselves safe, get safe.
Fling
something.
Just both of us just flicking wrists. Yeah, it's
a really good tactic. But yeah, if you do want to check it out, it's on YouTube and it's called Next Level League. It's certainly worth having a look at.
Or worth a look.
Something else that you've worked on, Lawrence, that I thought was really good, like truly brilliant, was the Antonio Conte documentary.
Thank you. It was a really fun documentary to make, actually.
It's you and Glenn, which is a dream team if ever there was one.
Glenn Cowie, who is...
disgustingly handsome, like painfully handsome.
Glenn's gifted in pretty much anything that Glenn puts his hand to.
He's annoying.
And he's so... you could just pour over Glenn all day, and a lot of women do.
Yeah.
And a lot of men do.
I do.
And he's a great partner to make a documentary with, because he's quite calm. He's very good at reading what you already want to have.
Mm.
His cut is actually... So sometimes he assembles some of the parts of the documentary... and then I'd go through it afterwards, or vice versa. We share the cut. And I always found that his edits were actually exactly what I was thinking. So the long conversations that we'd have about it when we were away on the trip. So this was the first documentary that we'd made. Two previous, we made one about Klopp, one about Pochettino, and one about Conte. And so when we came to Conte, we said the only thing we want is a little bit more budget to be able to actually go to Turin and take some cutaways, so, you know, get the stadium, get the fans, get those sorts of things, and also just shots around the city to sort of understand where Conte came from. Because I never really had an idea of what Turin was like, because to me it's just Juventus. That's what Turin is. When you go there, Juventus almost seems like sort of an add-on to Turin. It's not like a football mad town. It's Turin, this beautiful cultural place, and all these lovely people. And then when they go to the stadium, they become these Juventus fans.
Yes.
And then they go, and then they...
Rather than somewhere like Naples, where the city just oozes Napoli everywhere you go.
Yeah, so you can't miss Maradona everywhere you go in that city. You can't miss, red and black, or blue and black in Milan. Mm. Like, those fans are always there. Whereas in Turin, it seems a lot more of like a stylish thing. Like, they're much more involved in the brand Juve, those sorts of things. Which wasn't irrelevant to Conte, because actually Conte is a really interesting mix of like a brand and a person and perception and like all these different things, and how dedicated he is to his lifestyle. He's just a really interesting guy. And the best thing about doing these documentaries is, when I first got into doing the football side, I was a little bit upset that I didn't get to do like the documentaries about people or exploring characters. Mm. And I find there's a lot of very surface documentaries where they're like, he then went to Charlton, he then went to West Ham, he then went here, he then went here, and they don't really map what goes on. They just sort of go, he scored 10 goals and he had a good time.
Mm.
And the Conte documentary actually gave us some real opportunity to dive into what Conte was like.
Yeah.
And I didn't really have that much idea before. By the way, Chelsea had done a great documentary before that as well, like a good 10-15 minutes.
Yes, I remember seeing that
one, where they used all their footage from they actually had the rights to, and that was fantastic. But that was a great basis for then something we could be a bit more critical, analytical with.
I think that, you know, I watched both. I thought both were very good, but your one was far more compelling, because it's, I think, anything that is independent is better, because there's no agenda. It went on an agnostic football channel, and therefore was allowed to really encapsulate the person that he is.
He's a really interesting character as well, isn't he? Like, he's...
Do you think he's brilliant? Like, for me, I genuinely believe that he is dazzlingly brilliant.
He's dazzlingly brilliant at what he does.
Yes.
And I don't think anyone else tries to be Antonio Conte, because no one else... it's really weird that we didn't get the chance to include absolutely everything in the documentary, because you can't include everything in the cut. Sometimes their answers can't be fitted in to explain. It shows the ineptitude of the documentary maker. But the interesting side was, he's a bit of a figure of fun in Italy.
Is that so?
Yeah, so I'm told, but only in certain circles. So in certain circles, incredibly well sort of respected and thought after. Some circles, they say he looks like he's got a cat on his head, and he takes life way too seriously, and God, man, why are you so compelled by, like, why are you so compelled by football? Why do you even care about this? But then other people really care about that. Right. And certain players are very, like, there are certain players who wouldn't have a career if it wasn't for Antonio Conte, or wouldn't have the career level they have. Yes. Like Giaccherini, who played for Italy, he's a Conte player.
Yeah, he was playing for Sunderland, wasn't he? And got called up. Yeah, it's incredible that he went to a tournament.
But it's mentality for Conte. Yes. And then it was interesting because Mina Rizuki, who a lot of people dislike or don't like or whatever, because A, she's a woman in the game, B, she's quite an outspoken woman in the game, and C, she sometimes says things which seem controversial at the time. She wasn't talking about her and Mo Salah in a second. But she said he sort of went against what Juve wanted, which was this Stile Juve or the Juventus style.
Mm.
And he wasn't as graceful as they wanted him to be.
Okay.
And when he first came to England, he was very charming, very graceful. And I think over time, we've sort of seen the character of Conte evolve. It's a bit like dating him. So the early dates, fantastic.
Yeah.
And then you sort of reach that zenith date with the person you're dating.
And then he gets sent off on the touchline.
Yeah. And you can ride that out in a relationship if the previous dates have been good enough, which with Chelsea it has, because he got to that zenith date. He got to the first anniversary, which is winning the title. And you can sort of ride that out, but their character has to improve from there rather than deteriorate. And she sort of flagged something, which I thought was quite interesting, was he never stays very long at a club, and he's always looking to move a little bit. He does miss Italy. You know, he's compelled by football. He's compelled by being Italian, all these sorts of things.
So if you were to collate the information that you received, you know, you interviewed a lot of very informed journalists during that thing.
James Horncastle, Paolo Bandini, Mina Rizuki, like three of the best people to speak to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And overall, would they be suggesting that potentially this ends soon?
There was a suggestion when we went there by a few different sources that he wasn't looking for an out, but that Conte is not perpetually uncomfortable, but it's difficult to nail him down.
Right.
And so they knew, and to some extent Chelsea bought into this, that when they've got him, he wasn't going to be there for 5-6 years. And I think as long as you accept that, you can be swept along with the magic of Conte.
So he's an impact manager. He comes in, you win the league, you might have another good campaign, but then potentially it ends.
But it also has a long-term effect on the club where it gives the next manager a fantastic base to build from, because he has a set of players who have been broken down then built back up for the majority. Some of them have just been reinforced because he sees a character there. And they've got a great level of discipline.
Right.
So, you know, Allegri at Juventus.
Yes.
Benefited from that.
Of course.
Built on that and now has completely his own blueprint. But there's still sort of elements in that. Three at the back was something that Conte was experimenting with when he went there from a 4-2-4. And there's all these... He dragged Juventus out of that. Yeah. And he dragged Chelsea out of a bit of a shitstorm as well.
Massively.
So it's similar, where what he did was he wrote the ship. And maybe that's an undervalued part of him.
Taking a Chelsea team that finished 10th and turning them into champions is huge. It's an incredible achievement. I think everything was going wrong for the club at the time when he came in. The disparity between the players and the fans was almost unlike any other time.
Yeah.
It was often a poisonous atmosphere at Stamford Bridge. It wasn't a happy place. Suddenly, this diminutive little Italian arrives. We play West Ham on the opening day of the season. We nick a last-minute winner. And we never look back.
It changes.
And I just really hope... I know that the characteristics are that he moves on.
Yeah.
You know, in the way that Mourinho's characteristics are the same. But I really hope that he doesn't. I think that Chelsea need to do everything they can to keep hold of him.
So in the same way as a relationship, maybe, sometimes you have to realise the best time to move on. And actually, if that person doesn't want to be there anymore, or there are elements where you know it can be better with someone else, or you've got everything you want from the relationship, or everything you could have gotten from the relationship, and it no longer continues to grow, maybe it's best to let them go. And there are massive noises and overtures from Milan. yes. allegedly. And, you know, we heard this when we were out there, was that Milan wanted someone really? Like Conte. I mean, when he first left Juventus, Milan wanted him.
Right.
So this is obviously a few seasons, like quite a while ago now. And you can imagine where Milan might be now. Mm. Might have played out differently. Maybe they wouldn't have weathered the storm in the same way. Maybe it would have been a bit too early. But now almost seems like that perfect time. They have money to invest.
Yes.
They've got a young set of players and a young promising set of players who are hungry and motivated.
Yeah.
They've got Gattuso, who is not a long-term installment at the club, because he'll run those players into the ground.
Yes. I saw an incredible stat about him, or a quote. When they used to, if they ever lost a game when he was playing, when they went into the canteen afterwards, they would have to take all of the cutlery away because
he was so angry.
He would potentially just stab somebody because he was upset that they lost.
Only spoons.
That's psychotic. Yeah. It's stabbing someone with a fork because you've lost a game of football is it's the preserve of a lunatic.
I also think it's sort of the preserve of like a very sort of special level of footballer.
Yes.
It almost takes you into that like Gascoigne level of myth. Do you know what I mean? And if that had been a story in the 1970s, you'd be like,
what a guy.
But now, because we live in this sort of sanitised age, we're a little bit like, it's a bit weird, that, isn't it? Whereas on the weekend, he was shouting at his players when they were winning against Bologna 2-1. I think that finished 2-1. I think it finished 2-1. I didn't watch it all the way to the end. And they weren't playing particularly well. Right. He was like, if you don't fucking stand where you're supposed to stand, I will make you pay for it this week in training.
Is that what you say?
Yeah. And he's on the
threatening,
sideline.
Threatening his players.
Berating players.
But Adam Boltwood should adopt this. Do you think this philosophy would work with London City?
I feel like his softly, softly catch monkey is really working. Like
it's really working.
Hopefully it can, you know. Yeah. We'll see. Come the end of the season, we'll see. But if Conte then comes in, the weird thing is Conte will almost be a relief from that.
Yes.
So, and essentially Gattuso went in and said, and I'm talking quite low, by the way. Essentially, Gattuso went in and said, forgive me, I forgot the previous manager's name. I will be able to motivate the players better than he can. And that was his CV.
Okay.
He's not had a lot of managerial success. But Conte will go in there. Conte will do this. There's so many things that we didn't get to talk about. Conte trains the players without a ball. So, I think that's Conte anyway.
Right.
Shouts, ball is here, move to where you're supposed to be.
I've heard that.
Yeah,
I've
so heard it's, that. I he think stops it's called ghost, ghost training.
Stops the phase of play. If I'm here with the ball, where should you
where
be?
Where should you go? It's a similar thing to what other managers work on, which is Jurgen Klopp came to the UK and said, I want them to play, and it didn't translate particularly well, but I want them to play with more stomach and more heart. So I think it's a German phrase, essentially. Mm. What he's saying is, I want to train them to a point where it almost feels natural that they know where they need to be.
Yeah.
And it's not that they have to think about that. It's about reducing the number of decisions and thoughts that they have so they can play that pure Klopp football or pure Conte football.
Right, right.
And I guess that's the idea.
I see.
He's also impressed people at Coverciano and people like that, which is the Italian sort of coach training place where they are made to... Right. Write a dissertation or those sort of thing. Apparently his dissertation was really exceptional.
Really?
But then a lot of coaches have written really exceptional
He's a very intelligent bloke.
You and I sat next to each other and interviewed him. It was my first interaction with him. And was it your first interaction with him?
It was my first interaction with him. But do you remember he
was so good.
Something? Yeah.
That was what I found was really nice about it. Was so he answered my questions so well and they worked really well in the documentary. But then afterwards he was getting up and walking out and he was like, by the way, I know your videos.
That's right.
He was like, yeah, fuck off, mate. And he was like, no, the one where... And what I liked was he didn't just go the one where you go to Crystal Palace, because that would be easy. Any PR person could
tell him that.
He went the one where you go really fast to Crystal Palace, because you time-lapsed it, right?
That's right, yeah.
And you were like, you did actually watch the video.
I know. And, I mean, that was definitely a highlight, not only in my... career, like that was a highlight of my life.
Yeah,
Antonio Conte recognised me.
Yeah,
that was a beautiful thing.
And watched and had seen
and
something
had
you
watched
like
some of the videos.
And not
yeah.
only that, not just sort of gone, oh whatever. Remembered the video, and then like remembered who you were. You know, which
it
is
was
crazy.
It was very sweet, and it was very nice of him to acknowledge that, wasn't it? I think it shows something. There's something deeper in that character.
Definitely, but then he's also this sort of very typically Italian man. Like when you and I were interviewing him, he was very sort of formal, quite masculine. woman comes in to interview him. Suddenly he's leaning forwards.
That's right. He was all engaged.
Lower. Yeah. And sort of, you know.
Yeah. There's a lot of eye contact then on there.
Yeah. And there, but it was constant eye contact. Whereas with me, it was like.
Yeah. Just answered. Just, yeah. Yeah. He answered politely.
Like,
yeah.
Am I pissing him off? I don't know. Like, because obviously you want to get the best thing for the doc. And so it was quite funny to watch the way that he was like so Italian about it.
Just suddenly turned on the charm, didn't he?
It was, but it was literally like, and now it's, I think it was, his name's Layla and Lee, right. And as soon as she was introduced, he was like, right,
yes.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Straight into it.
Yeah, and it all suddenly became far more relaxed. It was just an informal, with us it was an interview.
Yeah, I actually almost saw wine appear in his hand and like this sort of, cool, of course.
Yeah, it was truly nice. What a man. He definitely knows how to treat a lady as well, you can tell from that.
Apparently his wife, I mean, if you stick with him, it's crazy. In the documentary, say like, she'll go down in the middle of the night and he'll just be watching football on the screen. Like, it's that level of dedication. Like that almost like Bielsa level of dedication. Someone said to Bielsa, who a lot of people come from that school of thought, apparently, you know, Pep Guardiola, when he first wanted to become a manager, went to South America and Bielsa put on a big barbecue for him and he sat and like spoke to him for hours on end. Pochettino was one of Bielsa's big, you know, trainees. Like, he's been managed by him a number of times and really looked up to him. Like, Bielsa made him cry, all sorts of things. Mourinho. A number of people find him a compelling manager. Bielsa can watch two football matches at once.
Yeah.
So he's trained him. So he's trained his eyes to watch two football matches at once, and he's not watching for the actual football. He's watching for the patterns of play. So he watches to try and absorb the patterns of play.
Okay.
And work out the way that those teams pass the ball.
Yeah.
And when he sees those things correlate, he'll write them down or like do whatever. And someone said to him like, "What are you going to be doing over Christmas?" And he was just like. Probably just watching football over and over and over again. I think being a football manager's wife must be.
Yeah.
It's a pretty thankless task in a way.
Yes, because they don't switch off. It's not a 9-to-5 job, is it? They literally are on the clock, constantly thinking about it, constantly preparing. Yeah. There are perks to the job.
Well, I mean, I guess the money is a massive perk. I've read a few.
What were they? 6 weeks off, 8 weeks off in the summer is lovely.
Yeah, that must be really nice. But then it must be incredibly. I mean, I suppose if you've got that cash on the other side, Conte's apparently an incredible family man. Really enjoys the family side of things.
I love those docs that you did.
We're going to do more.
I love.
We're just not going to do them on TFR.
No.
Yeah.
No, of course.
Yeah.
I've loved. I couldn't bring myself to watch the Pochettino one. I'm sure you understand.
I do understand, although yeah.
But I thought the Jurgen Klopp one was excellent.
Thank you.
So you're going to do some more of them.
We're going to do some more. Glenn and I
with
already,
Glenn.
Yeah. So Glenn and I are already planning the next one. I can't say who it is, but it's going to be on a
off
channel
camera, off pod.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's going to be on a channel very near to us sometime soon.
Wonderful news. Yeah, because they really are special. I think that the pair of you get them spot on.
Well, we're going. This one's going to be levels, as they say.
Okay.
It's going to be at 10 times the production.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but all through Glenn.
I cannot wait to see.
I'm going to blow the doors off it. It's going to be great.
That is going to be very exciting.
Yeah.
So to completely turn
shift.
The corner.
By the way, Conte's going to Milan. Thanks. Sorry.
Tell me, like we've heard about Antonio Conte turning into like the archetypal Italian, tupping a red wine as he's interviewed by a beautiful girl.
Yeah.
What's going on with you? Where are you? You are living in London?
Yes, very much. I live in Dalston.
You hipster.
I know. It's not really a... My girlfriend's lived there for over 20 years, right? And so I said, look, it's going to be the first time we move in together. I think we should live in a place where you've lived.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Lived for a long time, so you feel at home, close to those people. And so I live in Dawson, which is lovely.
Is that good?
Great. Dawson's great.
I like it.
It's a.
Are you down the superstore often?
Never.
Like,
yeah,
the moustache bar.
I've been a couple of times to all these places because when I was obviously a little bit younger, we were dating. We got to a couple of these nightclubs. Some of them are super seedy.
Yes. Super cool. I have never ever been cool enough to go there. Yeah, do you know what? You're right, it is. It's seedy.
Yeah.
I suppose it's the beauty of London, but also kind of a problem of London. You get an area like Dawson, which are the demographic that we socialise with. Absolutely. They live there, they love it, they're quite privileged, they, you know, they have a lovely... Around slightly below that.
Yeah.
Living next door, slightly underneath, there is a very seedy, very rough...
Yeah.
Culture there.
But there, and that's...
Like, the wrong pub in Dalston, an Arsenal fan will beat you up.
Although my seedy side is more like the sort of like... the nightclub-y sort of seedy side, where, you know, it looks like the kind of place where I think, how can you have a good night in there?
Poppers. It smells of poppers as you walk past.
A little bit, yeah. There's like a weird sort of...
Yeah, the moustache bar's like that.
Yeah.
A weird whiff of poppers. You could buy poppers as you check your jacket in.
Yeah, like it's just a strange... And there's from the outside, it's got like a crap disco ball.
Yes, and you're
a bit like, oh, mate, don't go in there. Just come a little
but
bit
But that's become
up.
Chic, hasn't it? That weird... You know what it's we see as like a crap... What I would see as being sort of a really tacky, awful nightclub. Has become what people are longing for.
I don't long for that. Do you long for that?
No, I like... Not that I can do it often, but if I go to a nightclub,
yeah.
I want to be in Mayfair. I want to be in Cirque du Soir.
Yeah, right, okay.
That's the kind of... I mean, not that I like nightclubs, I like restaurants, but if I'm in a nightclub, I'd rather it was in Mayfair than Dalston.
Have you ever been... there's one that's just off Piccadilly Circus, and I remember when I first came to London, I was so fresh. Like, you grew up pretty much
all my life in London, yeah.
I was very fresh off the boat, almost, as they say, from Burton, and first came to London, and it was Freshers Week, and I remember there was a group of us, and it turned out it was just only three of us in the end who sort of got into one nightclub, and a couple of people went off in their different directions, and I can't remember what it was called. It was above that that thing on Piccadilly Circus, which is like the World of Wonderful Things or whatever it is.
Oh, yes.
And it was in the building above that, and I remember thinking...
I know what it was called, yes. It went up to the very top floor.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was a
bit called Home?
Something like that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Home.
And I remember walking in there and being like, I've never felt so out of place and uncomfortable in all my life.
Yes.
Because I was like so fresh, like terrible haircut, sort of, I've not strayed from that, terrible haircut, sort of really poorly fitted t-shirt, baggy, non-London jeans. Yeah. Like, you can pick out people who don't come from London because their jeans are terribly fitted, right? You could walk down, I could walk down any street in London and go, not from London.
Yes.
Because their jeans fit well, right? And I remember being in there, and all I remember seeing was so many of the men, quite seedy guys, just carried umbrellas. I remember being
is that your overriding memory from
that
evening?
I just remember so many umbrellas. And we were with a couple of girls and we were with a couple of guys, and the guys were tapping the girls on the arse with the umbrellas
to come back to them.
And I was like,
no.
I hope this isn't what London's like all the time.
No.
You know? They were like, a girl walked by and they'd tap on the arse.
No, never
like,
do that. Never
on,
do that.
Come on.
Oh, mate.
It was really seedy. And they all had pinstripe suits as well.
I don't... That's massively not... That is not my
scene.
One bit. What I think is quite... I don't really belong in any of those the scenes that we're discussing. So I'm not a hipster. I'm not cool. I certainly do not belong in a nightclub. Concrete nightclub in Shoreditch is not me. And equally, what isn't me is those Mayfair nightclubs.
Yeah.
The difference is, when I go into, say, one of these hipster gaffs, I go in, I look around, and I think, oh, God, I don't belong in here.
Yeah.
And I'll get it, and I don't, and I look odd.
Yeah.
When I go into one of these, like, really privileged Novikov, the basement of Novikov, where, you know, there's, like, the odd the average price of a drink is a fortune.
Yeah, yeah.
I go in there, and as much as I don't belong, it's not me at all. I go in, I'm like, yep, I'm home.
Yeah.
This is it.
Yeah, exactly. At least I can sit on a comfy couch. Exactly. In here. Do you
comfy
know what
couch,
mean?
Yeah, table yeah. service.
Yeah, it doesn't look like the set from Saw.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. I think the dynamics of London are fascinating, aren't they?
Yeah, and you can go from, you know, you could literally be like 20 minutes apart, and you'll probably see two completely different sides of people's night. Going out. Yeah, some people want to go out and spend a lot of money. Some people want to go out and spend absolutely no money.
And you can do either.
Yeah, exactly.
So have you embraced Dalston? Is that where you're going out for your nights out? Is that where your favourite restaurant is?
There are a lot of good restaurants in Dalston, you know.
There's lovely Turkish.
Amazing. So it's a Turkish area. Yeah. So when the riots happened in East London, the Turks chased the guys who were rioting out of town, literally met with knives. And that was the local shop owners.
Yes.
Right? There is a good... If you're vegan, there's a good vegan restaurant, a good vegan Italian restaurant. I'm not vegan, but it's actually a really nice restaurant anyway. I took my dad there the other night. The only thing he wasn't impressed with was we ordered bruschetta.
Okay.
And it came, but with hummus. And he was genuinely looked across and went, I think we should send it back.
What? Hummus in an Italian restaurant blew his mind.
And I was like, Dad, we can't send this back. Like, we've ordered. That's what we ordered.
It's exactly what you've ordered.
Yeah, yeah. It's exactly what you've asked for.
Yeah, you've read the menu.
And he was like, bruschetta's tomato. And I was like, I know. And he was like, but we're in a vegan restaurant. Tomatoes are vegan. What's going on?
Right. He's just baffled.
He couldn't understand it. And then there's a really good cafe, which is now like my local cafe, which...
Proper cafe. Like, is it caf or cafe? Because there's a huge difference here.
It's like a... Caf Cafe, so it's like it's
you can't do that. I've given you an A or B option, and you've merged.
So it's a cafe, right? It's so good. I take anyone who comes to Dalston there because the food is so good.
Really?
Yeah. Like, it gives you the breakfast side, but it also does. Do you like Turkish breakfast?
Yes.
They do egg shakshuka, which is the peppers and eggs all done in a pan. And I haven't really had that very well before. It's the best I've ever had. Like, it's amazing. You go there, you get a great full English. You also get, like, you know, all your coffees and everything else. They do fresh juice.
Do they do the proper Turkish coffee with the grit at the bottom? Yes. On your final mouthful, though, you have to be very careful.
No, I like that.
It cloaks your teeth.
But that's what I love. Really? I really want that. I remember as a kid, we went to Istanbul and we got off the boat that we were on in the middle of Istanbul and went for lunch. And afterwards, first time I had Turkish coffee... We go in this restaurant, I sip it, keep going. I was like, oh, chocolate. And I remember at the time, because it was so sweet.
The treat. That's what you get. That's the reward for finishing your coffee.
Genuinely, I was like, chocolate. Just kept drinking it. My dad was like, what are you doing? Like, looked at me and my mouth was
just
completely black.
Completely black,
It looked like that, you know, on Instagram, you see those, like the charcoal your teeth white.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But the opposite, where I'd actually dyed them brown. Like, that was what was brilliant about it. But it's a great place. So it's called Root Cafe.
Okay, I look forward to you inviting me.
Oh, mate, if you want to come to Dalston, it's the best place for lunch.
I do like that neck of the woods for that.
Taking numerous people.
I remember years ago, I did a play. I was in a play at the Arcola Theatre,
right, which is literally just outside where I live.
Exactly,
very, very close.
On that road, on Arcola Road, there's a
rooftop, there's a bar at the end.
Yes, correct. But there's also a Turkish restaurant there. And prior to that, you know, I'm from Northwest London, have that sort of Northwest London thing where I don't really leave it. And if I do leave it, I leave it for the West End.
Yeah,
but that's about it. I'd say within a year of finishing the play that I was in, I was going back to that restaurant once a month. Really, really worth the journey.
The food is always worth the journey in Dalston.
Yeah.
And there's also more and more sort of variation in food now because, like, more and more people want that variation. There's some great Italian restaurants. What else is there? There's sort of, like, little open front places. There's a Cuban restaurant. There's, like, loads of little places you can go and visit. And actually, it's a really nice area. And there's a place called Le Cis on Dalston Square, which has just been replaced. And that new restaurant looks good.
Really?
There used to be a Jamaican one, but it was really good, but no one went.
Right.
I don't know why. I don't think...
Did you try?
We went twice. The dumplings were amazing.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was the right demographic in that area. It was basically like gentrified people and Turkish people, and both were like...
It didn't quite work.
This isn't my thing. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So, and it was quite... It wasn't spicy, but it was like, in terms of gentrified people, spicy. It was very
really
spicy.
Really spicy.
So those guys were like, oh, I can't do this, sorry, yeah. It was great.
That is hilarious. And I very much look forward to my invite to North East London. Well, the Upper East Side.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to start referring to it as the Upper East Side.
We call Hackney the Upper East Side, which makes us more like sort of the nice bit of Manhattan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Embrace it.
Yeah.
Lawrence, thank you so much for coming on.
Wait.
I'm sorry. Mate, I can't, I, of course, can't
let
I can't
you not talk about
the one and
Mo
only
Salah. Yeah,
of course. We and I apologise. We need to talk about the brilliance of Mo Salah.
Yeah,
the best player in the league.
Not the best player, but the most prolific right now, I think.
Signing
of the summer, absolutely. I mean, he could be the top scorer in the Premier League this season, and he's not. We didn't even sign him as a striker. We signed him as a winger.
Hey, he's on course for 40 goals.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
That's amazing.
It's ridiculous.
And in his first season in the Premier League, at Liverpool at least, and coming with a reputation, which again, Mina Rizuki was speaking about, where she said he wasn't the best decision maker. He didn't always make the right decision at the right time. And I think Klopp saw that and thought, I can change elements of that. That would be exactly, I can work with that.
Yes. And but because the raw materials are incredible.
It's almost like, what Liverpool do is overwhelm on attack.
Yes.
So it's not, it's quite crude sometimes. But if you can't handle Mane, then he'll pass the ball to Salah. And yes. If you can't handle Salah, then he'll pass the ball to Coutinho. If you can't handle to Coutinho, Firmino will then drop it off to someone else. There's so many different options.
It makes it impossible to defend against because you can't double up. You can't double up. Yeah. Like most teams, they attack down one week. So for Chelsea even, if Hazard is your problem, you double up on Hazard.
Liverpool did that.
Will stifle
Liverpool
it.
Did that.
Yeah.
Was it Liverpool?
You can't double up on Liverpool.
No, United
because
did that.
There's five of them.
Yeah, so United did that and Liverpool also did that. Everyone just fouls them.
Mm.
But if you foul Sadio Mane, then you also have to foul Salah. You have to foul everyone.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You can't play a game like that. Mm. And so, not only that, but some of his finishes have obviously been incredible. So, against Everton last week.
That Everton goal, because do you know what's so, so impressive about that? It's not the goal that I would associate him with.
No, exactly.
He bullied their defence. He fought hard for it. Like, curling it into the top corner, we know he can do that.
Yeah.
But it was what happened before that.
Yeah.
It was having the minerals to fight that defence for the ball.
Well, it's quite interesting, because actually, that's what I found him, as a Liverpool fan, to be, is much tougher than I thought
tenacious.
He was going to be.
I thought
he was going to be going down all the time. Yeah. I thought it was going to be... I knew he was quick, but I thought when he got tackled, it would be like, oh, Mo Salah's down again. He's quite weak. He's actually been one of the players who, when someone pushes him in the back, he'll push back.
Yes.
As opposed to the other way around, where some wingers just choose to go down. And the great thing, and what's weird to watch, is he almost keeps the ball in between his legs.
Yeah.
So it's like can't almost too close to him for him to control properly, but it's also too far away from you to be able to get anywhere near him. So he's either being fouled by you or he's going past you. And it's so satisfying to watch. And he's rapid.
Do you know what's really depressing hearing you talk like this?
Is he could have been a great Chelsea player for Antonio Conte.
Yes. And imagine him lining up for Antonio Conte alongside Eden Hazard and...
Willian, maybe?
Well, or Pedro. Kevin De Bruyne, if we're pulling at this thread.
Yeah, a Lukaku.
Imagine. Yeah, I mean, Lukaku, it doesn't upset me in the way that Mo Salah and Kevin De Bruyne upset me.
Morata has also softened that blow a little bit. If you were Morata-less this season and Diego Costa had left, which is part of the reason...
Oh, that would have been... No, that would have been a disaster. But Morata hasn't really softened the blow because the hole that he was trying to fill was Diego Costa and he can't quite do that.
Really?
Mate, Costa's so good.
But Morata is...
Morata's good, but he's not Costa good.
I think he's good in a different way. I have this perception of Morata, maybe because Morata seems like a nicer guy than Costa. He's a more likeable player
for me. Oh, he's a much nicer guy.
He's a more likeable player for me as an opposition.
Yes.
I like him more to watch, and I almost want him to score more. Was it West Brom he scored the hat-trick?
Yes.
Yeah. I was so happy when he scored those goals.
Stoke, he did score at West Brom, but he got a hat-trick at Stoke.
Because they started with one recognised centre-back.
Yes.
He saw that and just went, right, I'm having it.
Yeah.
And just went in.
Yes. As much as I love him and as much as I think he's a very gifted player, he is not Diego Costa.
Well, quite literally, no.
But in terms of his football attributes, what he doesn't have the capacity to do is single-handedly drag Chelsea to a victory that, from a defeat, not from a draw. Diego Costa would take Chelsea, an average Chelsea team that wasn't playing very well on a particular day. The game is, we're going to lose it. We're going to lose it 1-0. With Diego Costa in, we win it 2-0.
Yeah.
You know, he really did have that in him. And I haven't seen that in Morata. Morata's assist in that West Brom game that you're referring to is something that Diego Costa couldn't dream of.
Exactly.
But in terms of just sheer volume of goals, sheer centre-forward brutality.
And also intimidation.
Well, I think the difference is Diego Costa would bully teams. Alvaro Morata was bullied by Arsenal. it was, look, I'm not knocking Morata too much, but he does need to, he looks lovely. He looks like a lovely bloke.
He looks incredible.
What he, you know, I follow him on Instagram and he's forever baking cakes with his missus and he's a lovely guy who lives a wonderful life.
Yeah, yeah.
But what he really needs to do is fling a few elbows, score a few goals and rub a few people up the wrong way, apart from me, because I'm loving it because Chelsea are within a point of City.
Yeah, that is great.
Yeah, but sadly, that isn't happening. And, you know, he didn't even travel yesterday. The official word is that he had a back injury, but he didn't even travel to Huddersfield.
Which is slightly disappointing as a player. Who did you start?
You started a false nine, false or whatever nine, you call it, with Hazard.
And then
Willian, Pedro.
And then Batshuayi came on later, didn't he?
Yeah, he came on.
But it was quite a comfortable victory for Chelsea.
Very comfortable, We did very well and it worked well. And I'm not saying that perhaps it might have even been a game to rest Morata in. It's going to be, you know, games are coming thick and fast. We're so reliant on him. But
it was
Costa, he ain't.
I watched that Chelsea game and I thought Huddersfield's tactics, I thought Chelsea overcame them very well because Huddersfield sat very deep.
Yeah, it was incredibly deep.
Yeah.
Yeah, they. I mean, I saw it on the telly. Sadly, I couldn't get there. But they did a thing on the telly where they looked at their team's average position on the pitch.
Yeah.
They're all in their own half.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do that.
You know what? And this is one thing that we've noticed from doing the kickoff, which is the other True Geordie show we do, which is like a live show on a Saturday or a Sunday. Average positions is such a great way of telling who's controlling the game. Yeah. Early on, it doesn't really tell you very much because it can't really calculate it. But as you get to 90 minutes or 45, you can really see how someone's dominating a game. And it's really interesting to look at Manchester City's average positions is amazing. Like, it very often almost looks exactly how you'd lay it out on the actual graphic. Other teams, players will merge inside or, you know, like with Chelsea, for a very long time, they went 4-4-2 and it was actually 4-4-1-1. It's such a telling factor in a game.
Very,
I don't understand why they don't use it more.
No, it's very, I agree, it's very revealing, but very unambitious. The Huddersfield centre forward spent the majority of the game in his own half.
And but the thing is, when they then did come out and play football,
they should have stuck that big geezer who came on and scored. They should have stuck him up front earlier.
They actually looked a lot more confident. Yeah. Chelsea looked a lot more
sheepish. The game was dead then. It's like when we played the TFR.
Yeah,
can't get
they
near
were sheepish.
Us.
Yeah, but they were can't no get near shit. Us. Anyway, who cares? They were nobody's.
Oh mate, thank you so much for coming on.
Really
this
good.
Is,
be on it, mate.
This has been brilliant. And I look forward to going to that Turkish restaurant.
Come over,
guys. Thank you all so much for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, please click the subscribe button. And I'll see you next week.